You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another world. A world of trains, a world of empty fields, a world that is out of this world. You're moving into a world of both shadow and substance, of horses and colossi. You've just crossed over into the Arrow Zone. So this is the Arrowcast for February 2014. We're here, we're wearing our astronaut pants because this game is out of this world. As always, I'm Matt. My co-host, as always, is Crystal. How are you doing this February?
Not bad, except here it's still winter forever, because usually when it's maybe 3 weeks approaching spring, it's probably around 40, 50 degrees, but no, it's about 20 degrees Fahrenheit today. And it's been snowing a lot, and I'm not very happy with that.
No, I don't think anyone is. The people that are happy with snow are people that don't have to deal with it.
I would say that. Travel through it, anything involving labor.
So aside from snow and winter, what have you been up to?
Not much since it's been snowing, so just keeping warm. Just keeping warm. And praying spring shows up soon, maybe. We're in March now, it should be warmer, come on now. We had snow in the forecast for Friday, but hopefully I think it's clearing up, so it's just a degree higher, so it won't be freezing anymore. Otherwise, let's see, I got back to reading The Two Towers, and I'm not very far again because it's still kind of dragging, but, you know, Tolkien with all his explaining everything in minute detail. But I am enjoying it still, and I'm still determined to read all three books, and maybe one day I'll read Silmarillion, but who knows, because I know that is a task in and of itself.
Well, Silmarillion, yeah, that's quite dense, but it's more of a collection of smaller stories, so you can read them bits and pieces at a time.
I started reading this because I'm not sure if I mentioned this in the previous cast, but I did finish reading the Eco novel, now that I think back to it. And I don't think I properly ranted about the Eco novel.
No.
I've been waiting, but I think at this point it's just dispersed now. Now I'm just... I'll let it go past me. But overall, I like the book. I do enjoy how the author did try to describe all the rooms and come up with a history. But I think one of my problems with it is... Well, besides the big thing I will complain about at the end of this, but... I felt like... It was more about Yorda's story, and less about Eco. I was hoping it would be more about the both of them and their bond growing throughout their time in the castle, but it was mostly about Yorda's past and her history, and everything is mostly... Most of the book is through flashbacks and
Right. What
happened with Yorda. And it was all very interesting, it's just not what I expected.
Yeah, a lot of the flashbacks are to the castle's history. So it read all right, though. It wasn't a bad book.
It wasn't a bad book. It wasn't what I was expecting, and I was just really hoping... When I think about an Eco novel, I want to read about their bond and
their
time together, but it didn't really feel like that. It felt like a disconnect in a way because of the flashbacks and the past being explained for the bulk of the book.
Right.
But my biggest problem with the book is probably the ending, because nothing ruins a nice long journey... And all the experiences you've learned by having one of the characters forget everything and think it was all just a dream.
So how can someone learn a lesson if they forget it right afterwards? Or how can someone grow from their experience if they forget it right afterwards? I think that didn't sit well with me as well when I read it, but I'm trying to remember the ending now. Yorda survives, I think, spoilers. But,
well, just like the game. Yeah. I mean, it follows the game pretty well in that aspect.
But Eco doesn't remember anything of it.
And I get the feeling from the game, at least, when he greets her on the beach, that he does remember. I mean, the whole ending song, You Were There, I think it does call back to him recalling the journey.
Here's the question for the book. Do the villagers, do you think they forget that he's a cursed boy?
Yeah, like, what happens now that they're together on the beach? Do they go back to the village, and here he is with no horns, but this mysterious girl? Like, what happens now, because he forgot? He's just gonna come back to the village and be like, hey guys, what happened? And they'd be like, weren't you supposed to be sacrificed or
They'll shit their pants because they're like, you know, the sacrifice came back, what are we gonna do? So he can never go back there.
It's just really problematic, and I'm not sure why the author decided to take that direction with the ending.
Losing his memory really doesn't serve any purpose in the book.
It's just one little nitpick, but it's not a big thing that would ruin the book for me. I was hoping there would probably be a bit more references to Shadow of the Colossus, since I think it was written sometime after that game was released. I was just hoping for like a little bit going, oh, that calls back to Shadow of the Colossus, but I don't think anything
I don't remember anything that calls back to it. It's pretty much treated as its own entity, right?
Which isn't bad. I would just thought it would be a nice touch if there was like a little Shadow of the Colossus in there, since it is written after that game came out. Other than that, well, games as usual. Most of my time has been playing the Mega Ten series for the past few weeks. I recently beat Shin Megami Tensei 2. It wasn't as good as the first game. It did improve on a lot of things, but it had a lot of drawbacks. For one, the map is just so backtracking. There are so many errands in that game where you need to backtrack, and there's not a convenient way to warp back to them. And it's just really frustrating, and for bulk of the game is really slow in the first half, and then catches up again on the second half, but it still doesn't stop being so backtracky.
And there's no way to, like, repel enemies or anything that you have to fight.
Not that I recall, but it's, I mean, the enemy encounters in the game are a lot lower than the first game. In the first game, traveling the world map was really annoying, and I wanted to explore, but the random encounter rate was so high that I didn't want to bother with it. I usually looked at a walkthrough to go where to go for next, because I just didn't want to deal with it. It's not as bad in 2. It's just, here we go through this tunnel again, because there's no convenient way to get to the main area that you have to go back to 5 different times in the game. And it's really annoying, because there's the terminal section in every area, and you can usually warp into there. But for the main area that you keep returning to, it's broken, and it's just, why is this even here? To, like, remind me how painful this backtracking is.
The terminal's broken. There's no, like, side quest to fix it or anything?
Nope. Not that I know of.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
It's pretty rough.
Especially if they have the precedent that there is warps in this game, but you can't use it here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a prick job.
Another thing that was kind of annoying is that in the first game, magic is pretty useful. In this game, don't even bother. Just put all your stat building into strength, and then you'll pretty much have a solid time, but it's really annoying, especially when you get to enemies that resist strength, and magic just sucks, so you're just gonna sit there in a battle for a very long time.
Yeah, so there's no redeeming reason to go into magic, then?
Pretty much, no.
Yeah, it's kind of rough again, then.
Yeah, the only reason to ever build up magic is for a side quest, and that's really annoying because I'm currently doing that side quest and I'm grinding. It's a post-game side quest and I'm grinding to get there. It's probably not worthwhile. I'll probably give up in the end and just do something more worthwhile than that. But yeah, magic. Magic sucks in that game. Despite all that, it was a fun game overall and I still liked it. The other Mega Ten game I've been playing is because I'm a genius and forgot to turn off auto-renewal on my PlayStation Plus Japanese account. I've been playing Double Children, which was Atlas's response to Pokemon, because it's basically the Shin Megami Tensei series, except everything is cute.
Okay. Wasn't that game Pokemon to begin with, though?
You could say that, yeah. I mean, it did come first, the monster collecting.
So, this Devil Children, is it this doll super deformed kids?
Yeah, pretty much everything, all the demons in the game are now super cute.
That sounds awfully anime.
Very anime, and it's totally Pokemon, and because there are supposed to be 2 versions of the game, and you can trade between them to collect your Pokedex, quote-unquote, it's ridiculous. But you know what, it's fun.
Well, Dragon Warrior did the same thing, right? It was the thing to do.
It was the thing to do back in 1996, whenever Pokemon came out and was a huge hit. And even though it's a blatant Pokemon copy, you know what, it's still fun, and It surprisingly has its tough points, which reminds me that this game was made for kids, and makes me feel bad whenever I see my party die, but...
Is it in Japanese, though?
It's in Japanese. Fortunately, because it was aimed for kids, the Japanese is a bit easier to read, so I'm having, like, not an insanely difficult time reading. Like, if I was playing a Tales game in Japanese, that'd be terrible, but this one's it's not so bad. And it's good practice, so I don't mind it.
As for myself, my February's had some ups and downs, but I tried to make the best of it. Winter is here to stay. I can't wait to see the back end of this.
Is it snowing up there a lot, too?
If it was snowing a few days ago, it's been really bright. Like, the albedo here has been fucking ridiculous, but even though it's been so bright, it's been very cold as well, so the snow that's down is staying there. It's not melting. I can't wait to see it go. I've got no love for snow. I've got no love for snow. As for games and things like that, beat Tales of Xillia. I actually beat both paths of it because once you finish it, of course, you can use the grade shop, and then it only takes a couple of hours to get through it once you have, like, 10 times experience. So it wasn't a bad game. It was a pretty average game. I mean, it had good fights. It had a good battle system. The battle system was fine, and the level-up progression system, the Lilium Orbs, that was okay. So I enjoyed that. I found the bestiary maybe had way too many repeats, and the world was really small. Now, the world is small for story reasons, and of course it does the JRPG thing, spoilers, of you go to somewhere new, and you think, oh shit, I'm going to get to explore a lot of new stuff. No, it's really squandered in the game. Shrieky comes back, and she's not a super important character, but she's important enough that she's in a number of scenes, and I had to put up with her again. The cutscenes are still stupid, but they got better. Like, the story and the premise of the game, I actually kind of like it. It's no secret, no spoilers, that Mila is supposed to be, like, the physical human incarnation of Maxwell, the Lord of the Spirits, and I like that premise, and the story gets... Not, I wouldn't say great, but it gets alright. I got into it towards the middle and end of the game. I didn't like to put up with Agria, or Shrieky as I call her, going on, because she's just such a fucking ridiculous character. Just rips into one of your player characters for no fucking reason, and just shrieks and says really stupid stuff.
Is she a party member, or just...
No, thank God.
Oh,
thank
God. Well, you'd never use her anyway.
No, I wouldn't. She's part of the bad guys group. Like, there's always this bad guy group in the Tales games, the God Generals and Abyss and so forth. She's around enough. I don't want to just talk about her the whole time. No, but it's an alright game. It has decent bosses, has decent fights, has decent level-up system. I think it feels small because there's no overworld map. It's all zones. Like, a lot of RPGs now, they have zones instead of an overworld, and there's not a whole lot of variety between them, just environmental appearance, but not actually functional. And it's the same with the dungeons. I found there wasn't a whole lot of puzzles in the dungeons. So they were just like, you can climb up a couple of vines or jump down a couple of cliffs or something, and then fight the boss.
Quite honestly, I hate doing puzzles in Tales dungeons.
Yeah, but you don't like the Sorcerer's Ring or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Each their own. It's just that, you know, I'm not saying that I'm the biggest fan of them. It's just that some more variety in this game would have been welcome. So yeah, Xillia, it's an okay game. It wasn't Legendia, thank goodness. It wasn't Legendia. And it wasn't Abyss, unfortunately. But it kind of makes me want to play Abyss and see if Abyss is as good as I remember it being.
Maybe just to confirm, is Abyss your favorite Tales game?
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
No doubt. Now, Abyss has a hot tub scene, but this game didn't have a hot spring scene, as far as I know. And I...
Tales, come on, you're supposed to be really anime and you don't have, like, a hot spring scene?
I pretty well did everything in this game, and I think the swimwear costumes are DLC or something. Maybe you get,
dang.
Maybe get a hot spring DLC or something, but no. You have to be awfully depraved to download Hot Spring DLC.
I did for Fire Emblem Awakening, so...
rest my case. I also, from last month, I was playing La Mulana, and I finished that. I still have, like, the secret hell temple or something. I didn't find that, so I have to go back and do that eventually. And I also have to do hard mode eventually, and the speedrun eventually, all that. I'll get to that sometime, maybe. But I will say, phenomenal game. Really enjoyed it. But it's not for the faint of heart, and it's not for everyone. It is cryptic, just completely, completely cryptic. It might sound stupid to say that my advice is to take notes, but really, if you're playing La Mulana, take a lot of notes and organize them either by subject or by area, because almost everything you scan, you can... Like, you should never go into the ruins without buying the hand scanner and the first of the translation software, because you'll be fucking lost. You scan every single tablet, you scan every mural in the background, every statue. If the game says, like, this is the symbol for a head of cabbage, you fucking write down the symbol and say this means a head of cabbage, because chances are, three areas down the road, you're going to see a puzzle, and the symbol for a head of cabbage is going to be somewhere, and you have to activate it somehow. You know, that's not the case, but there's a lot of things, like, there's a mural that says, oh, there's a shape here that seems like something's missing. Well, you'll eventually find a key that looks like this, and you can use it on the mural, and it will activate something else in the ruins. Like, studious notes are what you have to take for La Mulana, because it's a big game. It's surprisingly big. It's really, really cryptic. Just scan everything, wall hump everything. No, seriously. Seriously. And the other bit of advice I can give to anyone, and spoilers if you don't want to hear it, there's an item called the Holy Grail in the remake that we have that lets you scan special tablets in every area and lets you warp to them. If you're playing the original or if you don't have this item, you have to backtrack, and that can be impossible. If you've used up all your weights, it can be impossible. You can get yourself trapped. So, number one, stagger your saves. Keep two or three saves. And number two, the Holy Grail, it's somewhere in the Gate of Guidance. Don't leave that area until you find it, and you've scanned the Grail tablet in the Gate of Guidance and at the surface, or else you're going to be in for a bad, bad time.
Man, really, I don't know who you're trying to dishearten in this cast, but I am sounding more and more appealed by this.
No, I mean, that's the kind of person it appeals to. I mean, it appeals to me because, shit, I love The Maze of Gallius. I love Legacy of the Wizards. I love that kind of game. I'm just trying to say, people, if you're going to play La Mulana, it might be the best $1.50 I've ever spent getting it 90% off. But if you're going to play it, take notes and annotate them, because there's a lot to the game.
I don't know, but I'm totally interested. I know, I really want to get to this game.
I'm not trying to turn people off it, man. I'm just trying to say, save yourself some pain and be studious with it. The La Mulana 2 Kickstarter finished. It didn't finish as high as I would have liked it to.
It didn't reach high enough to get a Mac version, so I'm not too happy.
Yeah, but that stuff might happen eventually. I mean, there's people talking to them about localization and things like that. And I wouldn't say other versions are completely out of the question.
I would hope so, yeah.
I did play the demo, and it's a lot like the first game, like exactly like the first game. So it's going to be more of the same, but in a good way, I think, because it was pretty clever, some of the stuff in the demo. So
yeah,
I'm looking.
Nothing wrong with that, then.
As for new games that I've played, the only really new game I've played is the new Strider, which, it was okay.
It's only going for like 15, yeah. Not much.
It's $15 right now, yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine it'll be on sale at some point, but if you're a purist looking for an arcade Strider, it's actually a Metroidvania, which surprised me. I've looked at footage of it and all that before, but I wasn't aware it was a Metroidvania. I thought it was just fairly straightforward arcade game, but I had fun with it. I'm not a Strider purist, mind you. I think El Viento and Run Saber are better Strider games than Strider. I know that.
I also
not...
like the Strider NES game.
I also like the Strider NES game, which is apparently a mortal sin. So I haven't made very many friends in the Strider community. But I didn't mind this game. I think its weak points are that the environments, I guess they're going to try for like a cohesive dystopian Russian Soviet kind of environment, but it's kind of drab, like it's very brown and gray. And
my favorite color palette for games.
There's some colorful parts in it, some kind of Blade Runner kind of environment elements, like signs and things like that, but it's pretty drab overall. But and like the original Strider, of course, had some pretty colorful environments, yeah, in comparison. And unfortunately, there's no dinosaurs in the new Strider.
What?
So that's a bit against it. And I would say enemy variety is a little low in it. A lot of enemies are just like robot soldiers, and they differ only in what they carry. Like, a laser rifle soldier can do a lot of damage to you, but it's just not that interesting. Some of the bigger enemies are interesting. There's crabs, there's chandeliers, there's an elevator.
Perfect game for me, then.
Perfect game for you. I think there's a demo for it. I would suggest that where you are more of a Strider fan than I am, that you try the demo before you ever decide to buy it even on sale. But I thought it was okay. I like the bosses. I like the upgrades.
How difficult is it? Because, as a lot of people know, I really like Strider, but I have never beaten it before.
It's easier than the original Strider.
Oh, okay.
There's parts that if you rush, you will die, which is kind of anathema to Strider, right? It's a pretty fast-paced game. But you can be fast-paced if you're good at it. And bosses, I'd say there's no boss that really took me more than a second try to beat. But it's a fair challenge. I've played on normal, and I'm playing on hard now, and hard definitely beefs things up, but not significantly. No, it's not that difficult, but it depends on how you're playing, I think.
Well, then, I should check it out, because I remember I was really excited when screenshots were coming out. But after some time, I wasn't really... I kind of lost interest. It wasn't really grabbing me anymore. But I'm glad you said it was pretty decent, so I shouldn't get back to it then.
No, I'll give the demo a try on that one.
Yeah, for sure.
As for reading, I've continued with A Song of Ice and Fire, and I've been pretty ravenous in reading it. I'm basically on the fifth book now, but I can only talk about the first three, because I can't talk about the fourth book without talking about the fifth book. They kind of run
simultaneous.
Yeah, it's like the events of the fourth book happen in tandem with the events of the fifth book. So I'll have a whole discussion about that next time. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it a lot, obviously. I'm reading this at a very prodigious rate. Towards the middle of Game of Thrones, that's where I was last time, it gets more battles and things like that, more classic fantasy novel kind of things. But all the conspiracies and subterfuge and political stuff, that stays in it as well. So a lot of the books are about building these conspiracies and building these plots and building these characters. It's like there's a lot of character building, and that's really important to the books, because every chapter is from a different point of view. Like, you might have Jon Snow for one chapter and then Tyrion for the next chapter. And it's not just talking about what they're doing. It also internalizes their thoughts as well. Like, you can read their thoughts as you're reading. So you get close to a lot of these characters. And I think that's really strong, because if it was just dry politics, it wouldn't work. But when you see how the movements in the Game of Thrones are affecting people, you care about it more, and you want to see what these characters are doing. The other effect of that, of course, is there are some characters that have point of views I'm not terribly interested in, because they're either kind of naive or things like that. Like, the point of view colors how you perceive the chapter is going. Someone might be a sarcastic character, and that's how it will be presented. Or someone might be kind of unbalanced, and so you can't really trust what's happening in the chapter. It's an interesting dynamic, but there's sometimes I get to a character, I'm like, yeah, I don't want to read this right now. I'll pick it up tomorrow. Or sometimes I'll get to a chapter, and it's like, oh, this is my favorite character. I'll read this one more chapter tonight. So it's an interesting dynamic. There's definitely fan favorites. Tyrion Lannister is definitely my favorite character. He's the dwarf with heterochromia, and he's kind of a cool dude. He's the best character.
Have you started watching the series at all, or are you still trying to finish up the books first?
I finished a series up to where it is.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to talk about that now, actually. It's okay. I like it. I would suggest reading the books. The books are a lot better. The books endear you to the characters more, I think. They give you more time with the characters to grow with them and to see how the world is working. It's a better format for this story. The show is not bad. It certainly has a lot more sex than the books. I didn't think that was possible. But it's an HBO show, so what the hell can you...
Oh, of course, that's why.
There's some things about the show I don't like, but I can let them go. Like, there's a lot of characters that have been cut. I think it's just because they don't want to have too huge of a cast of characters in the show. And there's a lot of characters introduced in The Clash of Kings and in The Storm of Swords and in The Feast for Crows that, you know, they're important, but they're in addition to characters that were already established. So you're kind of like, you know, it's hard to warm up to them when you've been with other characters for two or three books. So I don't think they want to have a huge cast on the show. So some characters are combined into one another. Some characters do things that other characters did. And of course I'm saying, oh, that this didn't happen this way or something. I have to be pedantic like that. But I can still enjoy the show. And some of the casting choices are pretty good. Some of them aren't so great. Some of them look nothing like the characters. But some of them do.
As in they're nothing like they're described they are in the book?
Nothing like described. There's a guy... Into spoiler territory here. There's a guy named Dagmar, cleft jaw. But Dagmar in the show doesn't have a cleft jaw because he was a pirate from the Iron Islands, and his backstory is that he was hit in the face with an axe, and his mouth and jaw split down the middle, but they didn't do the makeup for that. He's just like an ordinary guy in the show. So
how can you have a cool name like that, but you don't have the...
They never call him Cleftjaw on the show, so they don't have to show
it. I guess that works.
But yeah, sometimes it's confused. I don't want to get into details because it's major spoilers, but there's some events that are combined that don't make sense that they're combined. The only real character change that kind of got to me in the show, though, is they cut Virgo Hoat and put some other guy in instead of him. And Virgo Hoat is... he's called the Goat, and he wears a goat helmet, and he has a group called the Brave Companions, and people call them the Bloody Mummers. And they're a really bloodthirsty and hateful group of mercenaries. Like, they're terrible people. Really terrible. And they're really marginalized in the show, but they're fairly important in the books. And I thought it was cool because the Brave Companions, they basically have bloodthirsty mercenaries from almost every culture in Westeros and Essos. So cutting them is kind of disappointing, but they had a character in the show that does the same function, just not as cool.
Is there a change in the show that you do really like, on the other hand?
One thing I do like about the show is that they have some point of views that we haven't seen. There's some characters like Varys and Littlefinger. We don't see a whole lot of what they do outside of other characters' point of views. We never have a point of view focusing on them. And they're actually fairly major players in the Game of Thrones. So seeing interactions between them and seeing interactions between other people, I do like that. Sometimes it's just to drive home a point that you would have understood from the book, but they have to condense it for the show. But like interactions between Varys and Littlefinger, things like that I do like. Another World, also known as Out of This World, is a cinematic platformer designed by Eric Cahy, I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, for Delphine Software. Originally released on such platforms as Amiga in 1991, it has had a number of releases and re-releases over the years. It follows the adventures of a young scientist, Lester, as he tries to survive in the harsh alien world that he has been transported to due to a science experiment gone horribly wrong. So, Another World, it's a fairly unique game. Why did we decide to play this, though?
Well, my reasoning for playing Another World and suggesting it is because Fumito Ueda once mentioned that Ico was inspired by this game, and loving Ico, I had to check it out. It's definitely not related to Ico in the futuristic or combat aspect, but I can see moments where it calls back to it, like the minimalistic approach and the two characters having a kind of bond to escape this environment. So I can see where it came into play, and I think we'll get into a further discussion about that in a bit.
Right. As for myself, Another World or Out of This World is a game I've always kind of wanted to play it. I've always seen it in magazines. They always show the big black beast with its teeth bared and all that. And I've always wanted to play it, but I've never got around to it. Way back then, I've always like rented other stuff, and maybe it wasn't available. I don't know. But this didn't occur to me to pursue it beyond what I had seen. And I think what I looked at might have been for a console I didn't own then. I actually own Out of This World on both the Genesis and on the Super Nintendo, as well as Flashback. So I really should have played this game a long time ago. I just needed the motivation to do it. And coming off the cave, it was a perfect time to go into another platformer with puzzle elements.
And yet you bought it on Steam.
Well, I bought it on Steam, yeah. Well, you were playing the Steam version. I figured we may as well keep it consistent. As I mentioned, there's a lot of versions of this, and they're all a little bit different. So I wanted some consistency to what we were talking about. Another World, what immediately strikes people about this game, I think, is the aesthetics. It's a cinematic platformer, so aesthetics are important to us. And it's got a really different art style. How do you feel this game does for atmosphere and presentation? And you think it's fairly cinematic?
I think for its minimalistic approach, I think it does it fairly well. I think all the areas are distinct in their way, even if it is a short game and it's very few areas, but they all stand out. I mean, there's the cave, the city, and I can recollect quickly like what they look like and what I did there. It is kind of like a point and click, and like the cave, kind of. But those games had like a lot of text and dialogue, where this game has pretty much no dialogue, at least dialogue you can't understand, and there's no text at all, and I think that really builds up to the whole presentation of the game.
Right, just some gestures and some alien language at points. I think cinematically, it's similar to Ico. Ico is a much more cinematic game when you know it and can play it like straight through without barely any mistakes. It becomes a much more cinematic experience. And I think that's the case with this. It's meant to be played straight through. You die an awful lot, so that might not happen. But
oh, you die plenty. That didn't happen in Ico.
There's a lot going on in the foreground and in the background of this game, so I think it really is framed in a cinematic way. And I think it's a good example of a cinematic game. Like, there's a lot of games that people say are cinematic because they have a lot of cutscenes. I think this is a better way to be a cinematic game, that you are a part of the action and it's going on around you. The aesthetics, I do like the art style of this game. For the characters, it's minimal, like the game is minimal, and it makes the aliens more alien, and the world has sort of a kind of a blue and brown palette for the most part. It's sometimes like a really cool colors in a lot of the areas, but your hair is orange or red, and all the lasers are red and things like that, so it serves, like, the palette of the game serves to show you what's important.
Yeah, there's a lot of detail that makes things stand out. That really helps with the whole scene of the game.
And all of the areas, they're really well realized. Like, it looks like it's a lived-in alien civilization with history to it. And I think that's important as well. Like, it just looks like it's an old civilization, not sterile white corridors or things like that. It looks lived in. and it looks old. And I think that's really important. I think it makes it more foreboding, and I think it makes it more alien.
I think the motto "less is more" really works well for this game, just because all the textures and, in a way, everything is so simple that it just really adds a lot to the full game and how things work together.
The fact that you don't know a whole lot about this place, that works in making it seem alien. Aside from the cinematic nature of it, though, the gameplay, of course, has to be good to accommodate that. How do you feel about the gameplay in Another World? Is it intuitive? Are the jumps and the actions accurate?
Well, I originally tried to play as a controller, and that didn't go through, so I was doing keyboard, which I'm not exactly a pro at. But with this game, I don't think it really mattered, because this game is a lot of trial and error. And I cannot tell you how many times I died against those slugs in the second screen of the game, because I wasn't used to jumping yet, and it's just weird jumping in the first place.
Yeah. Well, you know what you could have done?
What?
Crouched and kicked them.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I eventually had to do. I was getting fed up with trying to jump over them.
Yeah, I died probably 10 times, and I figured finally got it, maybe by luck, but yeah. I mean, you need to... You touch a pixel of that slug, apparently slugs in the beginning of the game, and you die. And that wasn't very fun. But, you know, as the game progressed and you need to make more and more jumps, I got used to it. It was still awkward, and there's still, like, a weird stutter with the controls to what you see on the screen, but I think you just get used to it from experience with old games.
Yeah, there was maybe a bit of input lag. That might just be how I was playing it, though.
Yeah, I think it's just a learning curve, like with old games, when it comes to that weird lag that happens.
The jumps I had the most trouble with were when you have to jump over those little Sarlacc guys.
Yeah. And,
like, you have to be a little bit away from them before you jump, because if you touch anywhere near them, you get killed. So I was getting a little frustrated with the hit detection on them. But we'll get to that part in a little while. I thought the gameplay was alright. The jumps are... depends on the area, I think. But
it wasn't
there
bad. It wasn't playable or anything. And it's a short game, so you don't have to deal with it for that long, you know.
The gun was okay. The gun was alright.
Do you get, like, a little pop-up? Do you know, in the older versions that aren't the Steam version, you get a little pop-up on how the gun works?
I don't know. I just try everything with it.
Oh, once you
realize, once you realize you can charge it, you just try every function.
Right.
Apparently it has a battery limit. Like, those little electric rooms you go into recharge the gun. And I know there's a couple of times that when I was trying something, like, after you first get it, I ran out of it after one of the Mega Blasts.
Likewise.
Yeah, so I don't know how long the battery lasts for.
I think that's the only time I've had the battery run out. Otherwise, maybe I just kept going to the electrical room to recharge out of learning that's what happens if you don't do this.
Yeah, once I realized that recharges your gun, I was there a lot. But just,
yeah, for insurance, it, too. Yeah.
Yeah, if I passed it, I went to it. So, yeah, I thought the gameplay was alright, and it fits with the presentation. Sometimes it's a little sketchy, but it's mostly alright. To Another World proper, we were talking about those slugs. They're at the beginning of the game, but what happens after the experiment? How does the game begin?
The game begins with you pulling up to your sweet lab in the middle of the night, and I'm not entirely sure what the experiment he was testing out was. Probably particle teleportation. I don't know. That's how it always happens, right? Like in Half-Life.
Kind of looked like a particle accelerator, yeah?
Yeah, something like that. And it seems to be going fine up until lightning strikes his laboratory, and that puts everything awry. So after you're warped to this new world, the first thing you realize is that you are in water, and if you don't swim fast enough, well, you're gonna die right away. And that's when you learn everything is out to kill you.
Everything wants to kill you, yes.
Everything. From that creature in the pool to slugs on the ground to this mysterious beast. Everything is literally out to kill you in this new world.
Right. So this beast, we have to pass some slugs, and then we encounter him. He's like a gorilla bulldog or something.
And the interesting thing about the graphics of this game is that he's really just like this form with eyes and teeth. I mean, that's really disturbing.
Right.
So well, are the slugs, too, actually, when they bite you, yeah. I think. They just have little fangs on them.
It's kind of cool you mentioned that he's just eyes and teeth. That's really what he is to you. Like, that's what you're seeing. These red eyes.
That's all you need to see.
The anger and the danger is what you see. So he kind of chases you. How do we get away from him?
Well, first you run towards him, and then you need to run back. And the last screen you'll be on is a screen with a cliff. And if you look at your surroundings, there's a vine. And this is where you learn how to jump. Besides jumping over slugs or learning how to kick them, because Matt apparently was smart enough to figure that out, and I wasn't. But, yeah, after you use the vine to loop around him, you do some further running, and next thing you know, now you encounter alien life. Some humanoid creature, and despite your good intentions, you're going to get thrown to jail.
Right. In this big cloak, he kind of looks like one of the Mos Eisley aliens. Actually, not the only Star Wars reference I make this podcast. People might know who I'm talking about. He's got kind of like the gas mask with the long hose.
Yeah, the grunty guy.
Yeah, yeah. So he kind of reminded me of him. But when the aliens take off their cloaks, they're kind of like gray stone gorilla guys or something. So they're big gray aliens. And they seem like a warlike race, or at least... at the very least, and probably appropriately so, they're kind of suspicious of you. So when you try to make friends with them, they kind of knock you out with their laser. And you end up in a cage. And the cage is really one of the first puzzles of the game. If you've seen any movie with a hanging cage, you probably know what to do. But how do we get out of this cage?
Well, assuming you don't know what to do from watching every other movie... well, you could just mash your buttons and find out, hey, you can actually swing on it. And with enough velocity and momentum, you'll break out of it. Fortunately, you know, doing that also crushes the guard next to you.
Crushes the
instead
guard
of falling to the abyss on the other side of the screen.
Yeah, it's really a dangerous-looking room. But you kind of just happen to fall right on this guy, crush him to bits, and he drops his gun for you to pick up. Which leads us to the corridor. We have to learn how to use the gun. Now, the gun has a couple of functions. How does the gun function?
There's the basic shoot function. One of the first things you'll also learn is that it does a little barrier if you hold it down for a moment.
Very important.
Very important to learn how to block shots from enemies.
Yeah.
And yourself if you're not standing, if you're standing behind it. And then I think this is also when you encounter a wall and you learn that if you bring it up to full charge, you can break barriers with your gun as well.
Right. The Mega Blast can break most doors and some walls.
And I think at this point, the gun that you picked up had low charge, so you need to figure out how to recharge it.
There's a chance you'll run out of juice with this gun.
Rather quickly, yeah.
Yeah, because once I figure, oh man, this Mega Blast is awesome, I was just using that... you know, straight out, and I ran out of my gun, so...
The blast also destroys enemies' barriers as well, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, it does. Sometimes they put them up really quickly, though, so... usually you use a Mega Blast followed by a short volley of shots of your own.
Yeah, I usually just put up a barrier and then rapid fire as quickly as possible.
Our first firefight is kind of protecting our companion while he's trying to open a door, I believe.
Right.
And so we get our first taste of a firefight in this game, putting up shields, killing enemies, knocking down their shields, until we can enter the elevator. Now, if you go up, you can look out over the city, I think.
Yeah, if you go all the way up, you get a little observatory room.
Yeah. And if you go down, eventually you find your way to a hatch that your buddy can open for you. And this takes you to... like a ventilation area, which is kind of weird. It's a different kind of play control as well, and kind of dangerous. I didn't expect it to be so dangerous, so I died pretty much as soon as entering it.
Yeah, I rolled into Steam.
Yeah. And we were playing it on Steam.
Whoa.
Oh, whoa. See what we did there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's There's deadly jets of steam, and if you go the wrong way, you will fall too far and die. So, yeah, this dark ventilation system, you have to kind of roll slowly through it, so it's a different kind of area. It's easy to get the hang of it. It's just you can die really suddenly, in it, and that kind of frames the rest of the game.
To repeat, everything in this game is out to kill you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, after you get through the ventilation area, I believe you need to break a few more barriers down with your gun and then recharge it.
Right.
And then you can jump down into the cave.
Into the cave, but it's sort of not super intuitive that you have to jump down there. You have to kind of make a leap of faith, don't you? I mean, it's like the cave's not open. You have to blast the cave open. All you see down there is kind of a rock wall. But you kind of get cowed into doing that because where else are you going to go?
Right.
So we blast our way into the cave. And the cave is the first time that there's multiple paths. So we can go explore a little bit. And eventually we go down into the caves. How did you like the falling rocks?
It wasn't that bad, but it was pretty frustrating for a while. First time I tried to run through it, that wasn't a good idea. Then I tried to time it, and that also didn't go well, so I just stood there for a very long time to watch the timing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if they have to watch it closely, otherwise it's like, you know, what? How are these falling? Like, what's the rhyme or reason to this? I think you can pretty well run through it if you're running and jumping at the same time.
Yeah, but running and jumping is never a guarantee in this game.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you also start running to those enemies, like those floor pit enemies, the black things.
The floor pit enemies and the tentacles from the ceiling as well.
Yeah, so you gotta learn how to dodge those as well.
For sure. You can kill some of those with the Mega Blast, but only certain ones. The floor things, I found the hit detection on them, the collision detection rather, was the worst of any enemy in the game. I had to stand a fair distance before them to jump over them and land just after it, but giving me enough space before the next two, jump over them again. And I found the detection for those a bit tricky.
It's a really cool scene you get when they eat you, but yeah, it's not so fun when you see that 5 times in a row.
Yeah.
In particular, that one screen where there's like 5 of them.
Right.
And you need to jump over them.
You have to jump over them. Yeah. And you have to jump over some of them quickly, too. If you can't shoot the tentacles, then you have to run, or they'll grab you as well.
It's a lot of puzzle-solving via combat in this game.
So at the end of this little sojourn into the cave, we find a wall and like a long chamber. And if you explore it up a bit, you'll see that it's basically the same shape as the chamber you come to above. But there's no real indication of what this is for at this time. And I guess it's for a little later when we flood these caves, but I broke the wall just because it was a wall and it was there to be broken.
Yeah, if you see a wall in this game, I just assumed, well, I might as well break it, right?
Yeah. That can go wrong for you a couple of times, but at this point in the game, that's your mentality. So this is at the end of the caves, and then we have to backtrack to the falling rocks area again, and we go upwards instead of downwards. So we're heading back up in the caves.
How did you feel about climbing those stalactites?
It took me a little while to figure out I could jump on them and grab them, and then longer to figure out I could climb up them and not jump and fall to my death.
It also took me a while to realize that you have to distract the bat enemy to be eaten by the tentacles so you can jump through. That actually took me a lot longer than I'd like to admit, but
yeah,
it also doesn't
weird.
Help that I kept missing the stalactites. You actually need to climb a bit more up.
Yeah, see,
you can't go straight left. Yeah.
Yeah. As for the bat, eventually it's like, you know, okay, it's something to shoot, I'll shoot it. That was a bit arcane, but not too bad. Eventually you come to that conclusion. So to get back into the caves, we come to the big anvil-shaped rock that we passed on our way down here. What do we do with this?
I think it was a really neat idea that you need to shoot the base in order to make it tilt upward so you can explore the upward area of the cave.
Right. Now, I shot it the wrong way my first time playing this. I had to kill myself, I think. because I figure, oh, hey, I can shoot this and come back up, not have to deal with going across the stalactites or something to that degree. But no, I had to shoot it from the other side. And that allows us to go back up in the caves. And eventually, what is the task we need to do up in the caves?
Once again, once you see another wall in this game, you gotta shoot it. And by doing so, you will unleash all this water from the upwards lake coming down on you.
Right. That's actually a pretty cool scene, as the water chases you through the caves. You have to run, you have to jump. I kind of died a couple times, mistiming my jumps, but I like this scene, running from the water. Every so often, you pass a pit, and the water will flood down and gives you a little time to get a little bit of headway on us.
Fun scene, yeah.
So once we flooded the cave, we can pass through to the next part of the city. This sequence kind of gave me a bit of trouble because it's fairly long without a checkpoint, and there's a lot that can go wrong in it. But we enter the city, and our little buddy, he's crawling along the floor in a vent underneath us, but he gets stuck. So
you gotta press onward.
We gotta press onward. So, Crystal, what the hell do we do in the city?
Well, this is a long section, but after we see our buddy getting stuck, we press on. The first thing we have to do is fight a guard who is coming from... You're on a higher level of staircase. He's at the bottom. He'll come down. So you need to learn right away to set up a barrier.
Right.
Or learn how to fire really, really quickly. But once that's out of the way, next you gotta keep going forward, and you'll find another guard who's throwing, like, rolling grenades at you.
Yeah.
And this is another instance where you need to learn how to set up your barrier really quickly. I didn't realize the doors actually made the grenade bounce back. I kind of ran through them and couldn't figure out how to get past it for a while.
Yeah, the same. I actually destroyed the walls, I think. I put up a barrier and just shot through all the walls and tried to shoot him, and I was wondering what, you know, what's going on. But, yeah, grenades. Grenades. They gotta bounce off doors.
Yeah, and I mean, usually in the game, you're pretty much taught in combat to rush and kill things as quickly as possible, but here you actually need to wait a bit for the grenades to come back to him and have the doors still intact instead of shooting them down.
I think he has way too many shields next to him for you to actually kill him. So once I got the doors down, I think I was screwed.
And you have to kill yourself for that.
So, yeah, you eventually find out that you can bounce grenades back at him. That will become very important later in the game, so keep that in mind, that doors bounce grenades. Past him, we find some green orbs. I'm not sure what they're supposed to be, just decorations.
Mold decoration things, yeah.
Now, I never actually encountered the guy that you kill with this orb, because I died enough times in this section that I got the timing right for this before I ever encountered him. So you have to wait till he stops under the middle, like in the middle of his path, and then you can shoot the little wire that holds the ball and it falls and crushes him and kills him.
Yeah, I actually really like this puzzle. This is probably my favorite puzzle in the game. But basically the idea is there's a guy in the room below you, and you can't see him, but you can see his reflection in these glass orb things that are hanging from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And you just gotta wait for him to stop moving before you can shoot the orb and kill him. And when I played this, I had to go back and use a checkpoint because apparently it didn't register that I killed him, even though I went through the sequence. So I walked into that room and, surprise, I got shot to death. And you can't do anything quick enough to bypass him. You have to do the orbs.
So when we go downstairs, we go through this little warp thing down to the bottom level after we go down the stairs. There's a guy coming from the left, and we have to put up a shield for him. And I found this guy a bit of a pain in the arse because I found my shots hard to hit him. Like, I was breaking the shield, but he was putting up another one really quick. And more often than not, this is the guy that killed me after doing other stuff. But after we eventually kill him, we head left until we find a chandelier. And what do we do to the chandelier?
If you can piece together the map in your head, you'll realize this is the chandelier that's actually blocking your friend in the little vent he's crawling through, so you have to shoot it.
I didn't realize that this was what was holding it up there. I shot it because it was something to shoot. And there's a precedent made for shooting wires with that green ball. When we head to the far right of this section, when we're finally finishing this section, we get to the next checkpoint. What happens when we try to move into the next room?
You get jumped off screen and some guy knocks your gun all away from you and puts you in a stranglehold.
Right. And how do we get away from him?
Amusingly, you can just mash your buttons and find out you can kick him in the groin, and that gives you some time to dash to your gun and then shoot him before he gets to you.
Now, I often overshot my gun when I was running, and that got me killed a couple of times. So I had to redo everything over again. But if you get your gun, you can duck and shoot him, and it's a pretty cool scene. It is my own fault I overshot it, but that's just in the heat of the moment kind of thing. When we pass beyond him, we come to the water again, and we have to take a dive. There's like one air pocket, I think, you charge your breath.
Yeah, if you take the other one, you run out of breath before you can get to the other one.
Great. And I think just only for hitting a switch or turning off a gate or something is why you come down here.
Right.
Yeah, it's different. The water control isn't bad, and it's a nice diversion from the rest of the game. You may not think to jump in the water right away, especially since it was so lethal before.
But yeah, I walked to the right at first, and that didn't go well.
Yeah, he got shot up by that other dude. So, once you continue going, though, you get to a fairly intense scene, I think.
Yeah, the long hallway where they start shooting at you.
And once you hear the mega blast coming after you, it's like, oh, shit.
You gotta run.
Now, if you do the running jump here, you will get shot by the mega blasts. When you run and jump at the same time, you go a little bit faster than just running. So I had taken to doing that a lot. And, no, you get murdered if you do it here. And this is another place. I think I wasted time shooting doors and got killed. But you just gotta boot.
It's a mad dash to the right.
And then you have to hold off dudes when you hit the right while your buddy comes through the ceiling, I think?
Yeah, he pulls you up from a vent on the top.
Yeah, so what happens when you guys get inside?
Once you guys get up to the top, you get to do another sequence where he runs off to the right, and if you follow him, he'll get captured and you'll just get shot to death right away.
Yeah, so your buddy gets captured. Now, this part took me a little while to figure out. Do you want to know, do you have a guess why it took me a little while to figure out?
Is it because going to the upper path is really obscure?
Yes, and doesn't work half the time either. So, you have to go really, really far left to get to the upper path. And I kind of figured there might be some way to come around, but I didn't realize how to do it. Like, I was going in there and putting up shields or trying to shoot through the door while it was open, things like that. Didn't cotton to it, so...
How long did it take you coming in from the right-hand side? Because that took me a long time, actually.
Yeah, you get killed pretty quick, eh?
Yeah, you gotta set up a barrier really quick, but even then, it gets dissipated and you just get shot at, and your friend dies if you don't run fast enough.
It took me a couple of tries. Your buddy is punching the guard that has him, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me a couple of tries. I think mainly because I went too far in. And I might have gotten both guys after me, or I went too far in and just didn't have time to put up a shield. I think I put up a couple of shields eventually, and then had the firefight with the guy, and we kill him, and we get our buddy back. Now, this next part's kind of weird as well. It's the pits with the awnings.
Right.
And you're kind of running, and you jump after these awnings, and it's like you grab it, but you fall through it. And... it took me a little while to figure out exactly what to do here. Number one, you gotta wait for your buddy to catch up so he can throw you. Once you get over there, you have to do a normal jump,
I think. Yeah, you can't. Do a running jump? You have to do normal jump, or else you break through it or something.
Yeah, that part's a little sketchy.
And then after that, you need to go into a firefight, which is really annoying, because you need to be quick about that as well.
Oh, that is the worst firefight. That is the worst firefight in the game, I think. Because to get everything up in time... it's you got to be split second timing on it. That's the worst one for me, I think.
The last one was really bad for me, but this was equally annoying. So
once we're back into this, like, it's like a temple kind of area.
Yeah.
And it's further cements the cinematic nature of the game, because there's lasers shooting from the foreground in hitting the wall around you. Can they actually kill you?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think I died, so
I didn't try to get killed by them, but
yeah,
because I didn't want to repeat anything that just happened.
Annoying madness, yeah.
There's a little bit we have to do here. Number one, we have to lock the doors so we can kill a mega charge guy. We can get the time to kill him, like to buy us the time. We have to kind of threaten a guy that's escaping this jail cell, and he will switch the door on so we can't get him.
This took me so long. One, I didn't even realize he hits a button, and two, I don't even know what made him trigger hitting the button in the first place. I would hold him up at gunpoint, but then he wouldn't hit the button for a while, so it was just really annoying.
It's kind of weird.
It's really obscure, yeah.
There's also another weird part. Before we go up to kill that guy, we have to deal with another grenade guy. We have to get this guy to toss a ton of grenades down.
To the floor, yeah. Down the stairs.
You have to have him blow up the floor with the grenades, but it doesn't happen right away.
Well, the first issue is you don't have to kill him right away first, which is what I did.
Yeah, which I did as well.
Because, hey, it's an enemy. You have to shoot them before they shoot you, right?
So there is a door next to him. You have to put a shield up first, I think, or he might shoot you.
Yeah, you need to blast it down so you can throw the grenades down the staircase, and you need three of them or something. And you don't even know right away this happens.
I don't think there's any indication. There might be an indicator, but I just didn't pick up on it.
Right.
After a while, I went downstairs, and the floor's open. It must have been from the grenades. So we kill him. We go through the door. We kill the other guy with the mega blasts, which I think he's slow enough that you probably...
Yeah, you have time to get to him.
Yeah. And we hit another zappy thing. And then come back down, go through the hole in the floor. And this is kind of a cool section when we go through the hole in the floor. What's it like down there?
It's pretty cool because now that you shut the power line, essentially, the lights are out in this corridor. And the shots that would normally hit you if the lights were on now miss you, so you pretty much just run through them.
Right. And it's a really cool effect because it's a really dark corridor, but when the laser shoots, it lights it up. That's really cool.
Yeah.
But if you keep running and you fall down the hole, you're fucked. Because you'll fall down and there are guards and there's no way you can kill them.
Yeah, you do have any time for that.
How do we distract these guards?
First thing you gotta do is jump over that pit instead of falling down the hole. And there's a lever that you have to pull that will apparently unleash all the beasts that they've been holding captive in the room where the guards would normally shoot you. So once you pull that lever, they're all loose. Amidst all that chaos, you have to run right through with them. It's another mad dash sequence.
Yeah, it's another laser chase sequence. And there's a teleport at the end, which I didn't catch on to at first, so I got killed.
Right. I thought it was a wall you had to shoot, and yeah, it turned out that wasn't the case.
We reach that, and we zoom up, and we meet our buddy again. We put out a floor for him somehow, and he can finally fall down off the awning he's been holding on to. Like, this guy's fingers and hands must be raw, because he's been holding on to that probably for a little while now.
Well, you don't know. Maybe this alien race can do this, like, no problem.
Well, if he could do it no problem, he could have got off it no problem.
Well, that's true.
He shows you how to ride a special teleport area.
Right.
By holding your arms out or something.
Yeah, there's like a little graphic or something.
And then you find a Jawa sandcrawler. Essentially.
It looks like a friggin' huge trapezoid.
And this is one of the weirdest sections of the game.
Yeah.
And that's saying something about this game, but it's kind of weird.
Yeah, there's like this little pop-up screen on the upper left corner of your hand and a bunch of controls. And the idea is to mash all these buttons really quickly, but I was just taking it slowly. I'm like, okay, here are a bunch of buttons. What do I do now?
Yeah, you're looking for what these buttons do.
Right.
And some of them use weapons. So you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to use these buttons. No, you got to just really like lace into these buttons. And the more you hit, like the more appear for you to hit.
Right.
I'm sure there's a method to it. Once I saw that was happening, this was like my third or fourth time doing it. I just started mashing buttons.
Is this the only game where mashing like a ton of buttons actually does something?
And
on a control panel?
Eventually, we hit an eject button, and that takes us to basically the end of the game. Where does the ejection seat take us?
to a bathhouse randomly?
You see some naked alien arse cheeks.
Yeah, that's really what I want to say.
Well, I mean, at least they don't have bum dots. Apparently these arse cheeks were sensors for the Super Nintendo game. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Just so random.
I have to look it up, I guess.
No. Yeah, that's your research, Matt.
Academic reasons, yeah. So, this area, it leads into one of the most heated firefights in the game. There's only four guys you have to kill, but it's a fairly heated battle.
It's a long fight, but I don't think it was as annoying or difficult as previous firefights we've had.
Well, the one that we don't like is so annoying because it's only two guys, I think, but it happens after doing a bunch of stuff.
Right.
So yeah, that kind of makes it worse. But yeah, this one's not too bad. After you kill these guys, you run your buddy, he jumps out of a stained glass window, like a banff, and you keep running, and you get, like, the floor gives out underneath you.
Right.
And then you fall, and you think your buddy grabs you, but no, that's specious to think that. You think all these aliens look alike. It's not your buddy at all. It's an evil guy. And he kicks the shit out of you.
Yeah, there's a nice little detail that his eyes are different.
Your friend, he's not here, but this guy, he's going to clobber the shit out of you. And as he's, you know, doing his girdly abuse duty, I guess, you've lost the use of your legs now. You can only kind of scooch across the ground really slowly. And as you're crawling away from him, he's kind of like, oh, I'm going to take it slow. He's going to torture you, basically, before he kills you. He's going to make you think you can get away, but you can't. But as you're crawling away from him, your buddy, he comes down and starts punching the face off of this evil guy. All the while, you're still crawling towards a lever.
Yeah.
A series of levers.
Well, there's nowhere else you can go.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be around them.
Yeah.
Eventually, he kind of gets the better of your friend and knocks him down. You see that your buddy's not dead. He can see his arm clinging onto something. But he eventually starts coming after you again. And how do you deal with this guy?
This took me a while because my timing is terrible. But you're supposed to get to the lever and wait for him to hit the middle of the room before you pull it so you can zap him to smithereens.
Right. I'll tell you what screwed me up in this is I hit it and the laser shot. And I thought, okay, I'll wait for him to come now, but no, it opens the hatch if you hit it again. So you only have one chance at it. So this did take me a couple of tries. And it took me a couple of tries after I got it right, because when you start crawling backwards, what happens if you take too long?
You get shot at.
Right, there's lasers coming from behind you now, so you gotta boogie back. And
everything
get
is just out to kill you nonstop in this game.
Yeah.
Never a moment of peace or tranquility.
But once we get to the top, we're done. We find this, like, dragon.
Ridley? It's Ridley, right?
It might be Ridley, yeah. So, it's like you try crawling towards it, but you kind of give out. Then your buddy comes and rescues you, and you fly off for a romantic evening on this pterodactyl.
A whole new world.
It's like a never-ending story. It's a nice background, too, a nice cloudy background, and you fly off into the distance. It says now go back to another Earth or something?
Yeah, something like that.
So, I don't know. I don't think he ever goes back. I wonder if Flashback is directly related to this. Maybe I'll play Flashback for the next podcast, and we'll talk about that.
Is that made by, like, the same people, or...?
I think it's pretty similar. We never see if Lester goes back to Earth, at least not in the version that we played. So is he trapped on this planet, or was it all a dream?
Was there a sequel to this game, or...?
Did he forget everything and the alien is taking him to a beach?
Yeah, he was actually a sacrifice to his village, and...
Yeah.
Man, there weren't even watermelons in that ending. Oh.
So, another world, out of this world, It's not a long game, but it does resonate, I think, maybe for the better, maybe for the worse, depending on your experience with the game. Crystal, how did you feel about Another World? Like, in general?
I think in regards to its aesthetics and its presentation, I had an overall positive opinion about it. I wouldn't get back to it right away because the combat is pretty annoying, and I briefly said it's kind of like the puzzles in the game are kind of combat related, like when to shoot and how, when and where, pretty much. But otherwise, I think it had a really good overworld and a good atmosphere to it that I think it's a good game in my book.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it more than I thought I would, and I'm not saying that to disparage the game. I just didn't know what to expect playing it. I've only ever played like the first scene with the Black Beast, so I didn't know what direction it would go, but I did really enjoy it more than I figured I would. I'll agree, a lot of the puzzles involve shooting things. Really, your only actions are jump and shoot. So what else are you going to do in a situation? You're going to shoot something and see what results from it. I think some things aren't super clear in it, such as going into the background of that one area.
Or that whole area with the grenades and on the floor, yeah.
Yeah, there's some cases where there could be a bit more indication of what's happening. But I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a great cinematic game. I think it did really well on that end. And I can see where it's had impact on certain games. I can see... So can you see the impact it had on Eco then?
I tried to look for draws to Eco. The bond between your friend and Lister. I mean, it wasn't as emotional as Eco's was.
No.
But they had hints of it, and I think that was a good start. But I think it's more so the aspect of the minimalistic approach of telling a story and the cinematic feeling of it.
Right. And I think the minimalistic approach does a lot for the game in presenting an alien world. Like, if this had dialogue with typical conquering alien dialogue, I think it would be really cheesy. But since there's no dialogue and with the way the game is presented kind of alien and hostile, I think it's a lot better for it. Like, it's a lot more mysterious, it's a lot more threatening because of that. It's not silly. Like, these aliens, that's a really classic sci-fi look for an alien. Could have been really stupid and really silly. But I think the approach that they took, and certainly with the aesthetics, it doesn't come out as a silly game. It comes out as dark and foreboding, and you want to survive. I will agree the combat could have been a little bit smoother, and that, you know, some cases it could have just meant a little bit more floor for you to use or something like that. But I think with the length of the game, nothing overstays its welcome in it, and there's enough to break it up. I think it's a pretty good game.
Yeah, the game is very, very trial and error with the amount of times you die, and I mean, there were certain sections I got discouraged because it was taking so long. But I wouldn't say that really distracts from the game that much. I think it just adds to everything else in the game has to offer, because it is short, and you're going to have to see these puzzles a lot, because you'll die often. But I think it doesn't feel like an artificial adding of time because you die so often. I think it just works with how the game is and how it's presented.
Right. And as far as those checkpoints are concerned, I think there's only a couple of cases where I felt that I got sent back too far.
I think it's pretty much that one part where you have to kick that alien in the groin or something, because I think the checkpoint, you need to go back for a while.
I think the next checkpoint is right after him, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
The other time I felt that is at the end, if you get killed by that guy that catches you, you have to go back into the final battle again.
Yeah.
That was a bit tedious. But other than that, I think the checkpoints are fine. The amount of deaths are fine. I played on normal. I guess I would have died a lot more on hard.
What could possibly be on hard? Jeez, I don't want to think about that.
Like you're saying, I probably wouldn't play it again right away. But at the same time, Eco was a game I wouldn't play again right away after playing it. It's a kind of game that you want to think on and percolate on. And
let it sink in.
Yeah, let it sink in a bit. Because a lot of Another World is atmosphere, and to enjoy atmosphere again, you have to have some time away from it. I will say, I wouldn't mind watching a playthrough, like a perfect playthrough of Another World, because that would be showcasing how cinematic it is. Like, if everything was done correctly in one flawless run, that would be
nice to see how short the game is, too, without getting shot to death all the time.
So, yeah, final thoughts on Another World. It's a pretty solid game.
Solid, unique entry in the library.
Yeah, and I'm glad we played it for this, because I don't know when I would have gotten to it otherwise. But now I'm interested in playing Flashback as well, so, you know, we'll see what happens. It was good. I liked it. So that was our podcast for February 2014. Crystal, how can people reach you?
You can reach me at twitter.com/crystallize, KRYSTLEIS. And there's also my website, clocktown.net.
If you want to reach me, you can reach me at twitter.com/mattazoic, MATTOZOYC. It's like the Mesozoic era, except the dinosaurs are better. And there's actually dinosaurs there, unlike New Strider. If you want to read my site, salticodfish.com, I might have some new content coming. I haven't decided, but if you want to read it, it'll be there. If you want to talk to the Aerocast, it's twitter.com/Aerocast, AGEROCAST. The email, aerocast.aerocast@gmail.com. Thanks again, guys, for listening. Crystal, what in the world are we doing in March?
We're going to do something a bit different in March. We're going to do a discussion podcast, and we're going to discuss childhood gaming and all things that got us into gaming, and nostalgia boners, as you described it.
Nostalgia boners, yeah. Next month, like I said, we're going to try something new. It'll be a good one to listen to. Yeah, just check us out, because it'll be different, and it'll be pretty cool, I think.
And I'm sure all of us are all pretty old, the people in this cast, so yeah, retro gaming.
Oh, wow. Okay. Retro gaming. We're going to talk a lot about the PS2 and the GameCube.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Wii. That was the console before this, right?
Oh, man. Oh, man. The first Zelda game, Skyward Sword.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
All right. Talk to you later, guys. Cheers. Have a good one.
Good night.